Welcome to Mission Impossible. Your mission, should you choose to accept it, is to investigate with us the Mission Impossible franchise, 1 minute at a time. I'm Jonathan.
I'm Chris.
I'm Dave.
I'm Liz.
Hey.
We're
back for... Hey. We're back for week three with two guests that one needs no introduction. He is a pod favorite. It's Dave Palace from 5 Minutes of Mystery, the Groundhog Minute. And what else? Anything else, Dave?
No, that's about it for now.
All right. For now. and a new voice to some of you. If you've only listened to our podcast, Liz Whitaker is on the host of Mean Girls Minute, a great podcast out there, and she's also friends with all of us. So tough. Enjoy. She's awesome. We love her.
You just won't be able to escape me.
Yeah, you can't escape
her. Just deal with it.
If you listen to MXM podcast, she will be completely, you'll know exactly who she is. So welcome, Liz. So something weird happened last week. I was asked by a future guest if they could do like a WWE opening. And I liked it so much that I said, why don't we just start doing a WWE opening for every guest? Mm-hmm. So Dave and Liz, you are our first. Be gentle. We're going to put a music bed under you that you will choose. Hopefully you've already chosen your music bed. Mm-hmm. And that music bed is going to go under as I introduce you with some sort of fun, WWE ramp up.
Ooh. Are we going to have the flames and the fire? Boom.
Yeah, we should have. We need to have. Oh, we're going to have Gritty's t-shirt cannon.
Oh, my God. Yes.
plus flames and, yeah, little pot, flame pots. What are those things called? Fire pots? Those things that like whoosh, the thing that burnt up
Michael Jackson's
hair. Yeah.
We're obviously of the same generation because automatic the first thing we think of Michael Jackson's hair.
First thing we think of is that or Richard Pryor.
Richard Pryor, yeah.
But he was doing that freebasing.
Yeah, that was a whole different thing. No, I'm thinking if something's going to blow up, I'm thinking Michael Jackson catching on fire. That's where I'm at.
Michael Jackson caught on fire?
Liz, before the stuff happened that you know him for, he caught on fire in a Pepsi commercial.
Oh, I know about that Pepsi commercial. I didn't know he caught on fire.
Oh, yeah, his whole hair.
They burned the hell out of his hair. Like, inside of his head. He had to have plastic surgery.
Inside of his head?
He's the man with the meats. It's a good way to start.
He ate lines.
He's the second scariest thing in Philadelphia other than Gritty. Here he is from 5 Minutes of Mystery, Dave Palace.
Yeah.
Dave.
And you can do like some smack talk. You do any smack talk?
Oh, man. I have props, but this isn't a visual medium.
Props?
I got my shades. I got my shades, and I just...
I have so many visual mediums, brother.
I was unprepared for talking. I have visual props for this audio.
All right. Well, you don't... Okay. Let's see if Liz has better smack than you do, Dave. It's her first time on the podcast, and we love her already. She's a mean girl, but she is definitely going to make fetch happen. Here she is, the one, the only, Liz Gritty Whitaker.
That's right, I'm coming for you, meat boy. That's my trash talk. That's the best I could come up with.
Wait, am I being called meat boy? I don't think I like that.
Oh, I'm meat talking boy. To Dave.
I'm bringing the meats.
Oh, you're going after Dave.
I set up his catchphrase.
Without Stan Lee around now, you know, the superheroes that are coming up are not as interesting as the ones he used to come up with. Now we have Meat Boy.
Third tier guy. Here comes Meat Boy and Dog Girl. That's not nice. That's not nice at all.
That's a new Robert Rodriguez movie.
Meat Boy and Dog Girl.
All right, Meat Boy.
I have a
Meat
spy
Boy,
topic.
Zip it.
What?
Let me say what it starts and ends with.
All right.
We're at minute 11, Meat Boy, and this starts with Ethan looking at those Oakleys and ends with some flamenco dancers flamencoing. All right, Dave, do you need to say something now?
Well, No, and your wife mentioned banana bread. I actually had a spy thing related to that.
My wife mentioned banana bread off mic. What are you talking about? You can't bring this up on the show.
I can.
My wife's, my wife's baking banana bread.
I can work it in.
All right, go on.
Well, there
on.
there's a spy video game that it's what I highly recommend. Since there's no like good Mission Impossible 2 video game, I can recommend this instead. It's called Spy Party. It's an independent game this guy made. One person plays a spy at a party, and they have to do five.
Hence the name.
Well, no, it's just you can make your name whatever spies, and you will get randomly chosen one of the NPCs at the party, and you have to do five of eight objectives. It's given you eight objectives. Is you have to do five of these. The other person is a sniper with one bullet, and they're watching the party with a laser with a laser sighted sniper rifle, and one of the objectives is you have to pass along a code phrase to one of the other NPCs who it says like on the spy screen it says this is the double agent and you need to pass the code phrase to them, and the code phrase is always banana bread. So the sniper is watching, and through on the sniper's perspective, he has the scope and he's going back and forth, and he'll hear banana bread. He's like trying to look, see who's talking to who. So that was my segue into like an actual good two player. And it gets very tense to play good video game. So I just wanted to start off with something, interesting
banana
spy
bread-y.
Stuff. Yeah, to warm us up.
The safe word is banana bread.
Banana bread. All right, so tonight it's banana bread.
Or kumquat.
Operation Banana Bread. I'm writing that in there just in case that becomes the name of the
episode. The episode, Operation Banana Bread, directed by John Woo.
I love the exploding shades, but... I mean, this is even obviously this movie is very impractical at times. It's very impractical to do in a public
hold on,
area.
Hold on, wait, before you get to that, Dave, what is your history with this movie?
Okay, we're starting there. We're starting with the past.
Oh, fine. Okay.
I watched this film. I believe it was the summer it came out. Right? Was it summer of 2000?
Summer 2000.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was down the shore with my folks. And it was a quiet weekend, which is weird because whenever this movie was in theaters, we were down the shore, but we were working, so maybe it was off season. Because we went to the theater, and we were the only ones at the theater that day. Hmm. So I saw
that's crazy.
I saw it, in an empty theater down the shore with my parents, and we were doing like chores all day. I remember being so bored out of my mind. I was like helping lift like wood, and we were like working on like the crawl space and stuff. So I was like crawling around. So like I was like, oh my god, I'm so bored. And so finally my parents are like, all right, well, we're done doing chores. We'll go like get something to eat and we'll go to the movies. And yeah, Mission Impossible 2 is playing. So maybe that's what it is. Like this movie was very exciting for me as a kid because I get to like run around when the action scenes are happening. I get to like, pretend I'm on the motorcycle and shooting the guns that Tom Cruise does. But yeah, I watched this movie again outside of just our minutes before we did record. And I go, man, there's a lot to this movie that's not action. There's a lot of not action.
That's exactly how I saw Neverending Story. I saw Neverending Story by myself with my parents. And I actually put together a G.I. Joe toy because we were at the mall and we were at the movie theater. And so when I watched the movie, I was kind of like watching it over my shoulder as I literally put together a swamp boat.
Wait, you took a Lego kit? To the movie?
No, no, it was at a mall. I'd bought a G.I. Joe. It's not Legos. It was G.I. Joe, and you had to like assemble the stuff.
They used to have toy stores at malls.
Right.
And movie theaters.
I was assembling this ship, this hover, fan boat type of thing.
Sure.
And I'm just watching a movie about a horse that gets murdered. That's pretty much the Neverending Story, right?
Yeah.
Liz, what about you? What's your background with this movie?
I had not seen this movie until
today.
I don't know, like 2 months ago. And I only watched the first one because I was listening to your podcast. So the first Mission Impossible I saw was Mission Impossible 3.
Okay, that's not bad.
No, that's not too bad.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure I saw that in the theater with my boyfriend at the time. And so.
Did you get lucky?
I mean, probably. I don't know.
I mean, probably. I always close in a movie.
It was 2003. I was 18 years old.
Okay.
I mean,
ooh, thank God. I'm glad we didn't. I saw it when I was 12, Jonathan. Jesus. So you have not seen this movie?
No, I watched it on a whim like a month or two ago, and
awesome.
All I remember about it is how much shade I got for the size of my television from you.
Huh. Who on Facebook. That's weird. Yeah. Okay. That's true. Yeah, your wall. Well, look, we have a thing about how far away your drink should be from your computer. I have a thing also about when you have wall space and you have a TV on it, your TV should be a certain size.
Yeah.
Otherwise, why have it on the wall?
Because there's nowhere else to put it.
I got you. I got you.
Do not make me diagram my living room.
My wall is my TV, so that works out for me.
See? See, Chris has it right. It's all TV.
All wall. No. No wall. I don't even have a TV. I just have a wall with a screen on it, and that's my TV.
He can live in a yurt as long as one side of it is just able to project a giant.
And that's the first thing I do when I look for an apartment or a house. It's always, is there a wall that I can project? Yep, that's it. Okay, cool.
When we bought our condo, I said, I know this is weird, but I need a 10-foot wall. And they're like, why? I go, TV.
Yeah.
Gotta have 10-foot.
Yeah, whenever I go someplace and they're like, oh, you know, there's a fireplace over there in the corner. You can put your TV right next to it. I'm like, in the corner? TVs don't go in the corners.
Don't go in the corner.
They go up against the wall, and my table, my chairs and couch go behind in front of it. That's how it works. I gotta have space for my projector. I need at least 12 feet to shoot that projector going on the screen. So it fills that whole wall. So yeah.
Preach.
Yep. And I mean, when I looked at apartments, I was like, nope, this isn't going to work. They're like, why? You haven't even looked at it. I go, there's no wall.
It's just open to the air. There are no walls.
there's no wall. There's a kitchen, and there's a sliding glass door and a door, but no wall that I can use. Nope. Let's go look at another one.
My house buying needs were very different, and I don't spend enough time watching things on TV to like prioritize buying a bigger TV.
Just don't say, I don't own a TV.
No, I have three.
Oh, awesome. Good.
That's good. Okay.
That's the bare minimum
to have.
One of them is broken. One of them sits on the desk in my craft room and is just a giant computer monitor. And the other one sits on my fireplace and offends Jonathan.
It does.
Well, a lot of things offend Jonathan. So, I mean,
yeah, I'm fussy. Don't worry about it.
Yeah. We're old.
Well, on this scene, we talked about this last week. The script actually called for the credits to be before this scene happened with Ethan, but Tom Cruise said, I want it after I throw the glasses, because that'll be a better cold opening. He's not wrong, but basically we have two cold openings.
Mm-hmm.
You guys start with the end of the second cold opening. He's gotten his mission, and he's now going to take the glasses, and he's saying, if I told you where I was, it wouldn't be a vacation. He throws the sunglasses at us, you know, Maximum Extreme style, and they blow up. We talked about some alternate endings for this scene last week, what they could be. Chris, yes. I will tell you, I'm happy to say that what was written originally was one of the cheesy things that we thought of last week.
Oh, yeah.
We said it would be better if the sunglasses had been sitting there when he got there.
Yeah.
Like, instead of them being shot out of some sort of weird, speaking of t-shirt cannons, you know, it's like shot at him like from a lawn dart t-shirt cannon weird thing, and he pulls them out and he puts them on. It's like, that seems overly complex. It would have been much more interesting if they'd been sitting there, maybe with like this cool backpack, and then he's putting on the backpack as he puts on the Oakleys, and they tell him his mission, and then at the end he takes them and he throws them and then dives off the cliff like in some sort of cool Red Bull base jumping thing. That's basically what they had in the script. I don't know why they would change it at this point, but I think that would have been cool. Like, he jumped, and then his, like, right before his chute opens, it like explodes behind him, and that's the opening.
Yeah.
That would have been cool.
Yeah, it would have been.
Yeah, it's like I don't know, like a weird red herring. Like, oh no, a helicopter, guys about to fire a rocket at him. Oh no, it's just the shades for him to put on.
He's literally throwing shade at him.
If you're gonna shoot something out of a helicopter at someone, why sunglasses? Like, the point of having it be in sunglasses is for them to be inconspicuous. But when fired from a helicopter, they're no longer inconspicuous.
So, yeah.
Well, neither's the helicopter. He was quietly climbing a mountain very stealthily, and no one knows where he is. And then the loudest thing that can fly flew up to him and shot the loudest thing at him that it could.
And why not just send him a tape recorder at that point?
We talked about, what about just an envelope with some string? Literally just drop an envelope to him.
Sure.
Sure, there's lots of
that makes more sense.
Yeah, it's a, because the plateau he's on It looks like you could land the helicopter on it. So at that point, they could have just landed. Guy could have walked up, hand him a briefcase, and then just left. Like, it could have just, you know, it's like, yeah, so this movie, everything we're going to say, it's a lot of convoluted things. Like, a lot of, we go 10 spaces right to take the one left turn. That's what it feels like.
It's almost like John Woo heard all these things every time. Like, he's just standing there. It's like that John Mulaney skit with the lead singer, Mick Jagger. No, not funny. It's literally John Woo's like standing there like going, no, 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 yes. Like they're just pitching him stuff. We could have him jump off the roof. No, boring. We could have the glasses come in a suitcase. Dumb.
He could already be wearing them and they have like some sort of wireless transmission.
Yeah. No.
That would make way more sense.
I don't know, John. They show up in a t-shirt cannon. Yes, 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 yes.
No, it does remind me of that Key and Peele sketch where they're pitching Gremlins 2. That's exactly what it feels like this movie was, you know, where they're like, oh, we're going to have him do motorcycles and they're going to do motorcycle foo. Oh, yeah, that's good. That, we'll put that in.
I think on the day, this was also at a time when Tom Cruise was trying to become ramp it up.
Oh, yeah.
And I think some of the stuff was on the day. And I think John Woo is the kind of director that if he and John Woo are bandying back and forth, he's gonna go with the extreme thing and not turn down John Woo, not be like, that's a little much.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
because at no point in this movie do I feel anyone said that's a little much.
Well, you know, if you're gonna hire John Woo to make your movie, let him go full Woo. You know, I mean,
full Woo is good Woo.
It's a pretty good John Woo movie.
The second half is a good John Woo movie. The first half, it's like, you almost were like, John Woo's got to do something. There's got to be, there's no action.
Have you seen John Woo's Asian films? Because they're pretty much the same thing as this. There's nothing happening for like an hour, and then all of a sudden, Chow Yun-Fat comes out of the ceiling and starts blowing things away.
Hard-boiled is just like, I feel like you get, every 10 minutes, there's a good action scene or something happens or some tension.
Yeah, but like something like Bullet in the Head, there's not. It takes a little while to get going on that one. Even Better Tomorrow, you got some slow goings in there.
Better Tomorrow. I haven't thought about
Better
that.
Better Tomorrow. Oh my God. Yeah. The shotgun.
Well, I mean, Better Tomorrow too is even crazier, but yeah. I mean, you know, but I mean, here, the first thing you got is Tom Cruise you got the plane crash, you got Cruise on the mountain, and then you got a car chase within the next, 10, 15 minutes. Yeah. You know, there's quite a bit of action, not in the sense of a woo sort of thing, but there is quite a bit of action in the sense of, and, kind of woo drama, if you will.
And I don't know if American audiences, now American audiences would be fine with this or more action.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
But I think at this time, everybody's like, holy crap, there's so much stuff going on. Yeah. And we're all like, just wait. just wait.
Yeah.
It's so funny. You guys have talked about this in the past, is that this came after Face Off.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yet I feel like Face Off did a way better job of setting up the rivalry between two characters than we get in this film. That's what bugs me so much, is that you think they should ramp up the villain. The first villain is his boss. The second villain is a man who uses him, and they know each other so well. And like,
well, I think a lot of that comes into the fact that I don't think Dougray Scott is the best choice for this. I think had they gotten somebody that was of equal level as Cruise, which they should have done, it would have been a whole different movie.
Yeah, the reason why John Travolta and Nicolas Cage, Johnny Cage, almost said Johnny Cage,
Johnny Cage,
and Johnny Cage from Mortal Kombat. Finish him. Yeah, wait, there he is. Dave Palace is showing us he has a Nicolas Cage mug with his creepy face on.
Terrifying.
But that is terrifying.
It is terrifying. But yeah, if you'd have two guys that were chewing scenery that way, I think this movie would have actually not been a Mission Impossible movie. It still needed to be a Tom Cruise movie.
Yeah.
But I agree. Dougray Scott is not.
No.
We'll talk about this later.
You can't understand what you're saying. And I'm
his Welsh accent. He has a Welsh accent, and it's just really hard to pinpoint.
I think Welsh have the worst accent. I think they're the worst people.
All right, you've heard it here first, everyone.
I mean,
hold on. Let me check our metrics.
Yeah,
exactly. Hey, people listen to us in Wales.
Would you like to look up the origins of my last name?
Oh, well, yeah, but you don't. Are you sound bloody like one Welsh? Those people.
Yeah. What you mean, those people?
Coming out, swinging.
I mean, let's see, who represents Welsh? It's him and Christian Bale. How am I doing so far?
Catherine Zeta-Jones.
I just think of Doctor Who, because it's all filmed in Wales.
Oh, yeah.
Wayne Newton? Not Wayne Newton, the other one. Tom Jones.
Tom Jones, yes.
You got that accent, and I'll approve of you.
Captain Jack Harkness?
Yeah. I don't think the actor... John Barrowman's not Welsh, though.
Yes,
is he? He's Welsh?
He's Welsh. He can do both accents. I believe he's Welsh. Looking up John Barrowman. Oh, it says he's Scottish-American. He's born in Glasgow.
Sorry, I forgot she was going to talk to me.
Yeah, that's the whole point of it, yep.
I never used Siri. I just thought she would
Alexa,
return
is result. John Barrowman is Welsh? She says she doesn't
Who?
Know. Did you say Doug Ray Scott?
He's from Glasgow.
He's Glasgow. Yeah. All right, cut this.
Look, if you talk like that, be prepared for me to put subtitles on.
Dave Powell's
I'm sure
putting subtitles.
Feel the same about your accent, Dave.
If you're going to cast somebody that's like Dougray Scott, Dougray to me is like the poor man's Ewan McGregor in this.
Can you imagine Ewan McGregor as a bad guy?
Oh, yeah, I can imagine.
How good that would be?
Dougray Scott, I just remember he played like the exact same role in the Jack Ryan movie. And I was like, man.
Which one?
The one with Chris Pine.
Oh, I never saw it. I've got it sitting here, but I haven't watched it yet.
I watched parts of it, and like it was. I think I didn't pay for it. It must have been free or something at some point.
No, mine came with my Jack Ryan collection, so I haven't even watched it.
No, it's
your
it's,
Jack Ryan collection.
It's
happening.
It was
here.
Like so
the 4K
bad.
Jack Ryan collection.
It was so bad. Amazon is like, okay, we'll do the TV series and reboot it because Chris Pine is not. Chris Pine and Kevin Costner are not saving this franchise.
No, Kevin Costner should have been, if he was going to do it, he should have done it when he was younger.
And I think Dougray Scott was playing a Russian guy with a Welsh accent. So.
Oh, God. Well, appropriate. We've come around. We've got Sean Connery playing Russian as well.
Yeah, but like, I don't know.
Another Welshman.
I thought he was Scottish. Yeah.
Scottish Welsh.
Famously Welsh.
he's Spanish and Egyptian, remember.
and Japanese. He can play a Japanese man.
Yes, I'm everything. Oh, yeah, from Rising Sun. Domo arigato, Mr. Roboto.
You only live twice.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
But yeah, Rising Sun, too.
Rising Sun with Wesley Snipes, also Asian.
Wesley Snipes.
Well, the 2000s were racially bad
movies.
I don't know, just put this white guy in it.
Yeah.
Say he's half Asian.
And also, Dougray Scott and Tom Cruise also have like the same hair, which you're going to find out later in this film. During a few fight scenes, you go, it's just guys. It's just guys.
Which one is it?
It's just mullets. It's just beautiful mullets.
Beautiful brown mullets.
This is peak bad Tom Cruise hair.
Wait. You don't like his hair in this movie?
This is a new take.
I think he's glorious looking. And this week alone, we're going to get a honey shot of him. And it's like, oh, yeah, he's so good looking.
No, it's weird. It either needs to be a little bit longer or a little bit shorter.
I
okay,
it's
Goldilocks.
Like mom shag length right now.
Yeah,
he's got mom hair.
Liz is right.
Oh, okay.
I'm sorry. I honestly, because of the amount of wrongness I had in certain moments of Mission Impossible 2, I'm going to watch Mission Impossible 3 with definitely a more open mind now. But I do like his hair in Mission Impossible 3. That is the perfect tight Tom Cruise tactical utility hair.
Tactical hair.
Tight Tom Cruise tactical.
If you're a spy, everything should be should be tactical and tight. I mean, obviously, is Mission Impossible 1 hair is also...
Yeah, you better keep it tight if you're a spy.
Tactical and tight.
You know what actually would have been a fun, maybe not, but I think a more fun villain is... I know they made that joke on MTV about Ben Stiller being Tom Cruise's stunt double, but what if Ben Stiller was the villain of this film?
Oh, that would have been interesting, yeah.
No.
I don't think anyone would take it seriously.
I don't think anybody would take it seriously, but yeah, exactly. Now you probably could get away with it, but then I don't think so.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, go playing against type and be like, oh, Ben Stiller's playing a bad guy.
Yeah.
That's what reminded me of, I kept saying Wayne Newton. Wayne Newton's in what?
License to Kill.
License to Kill.
I was just watching that.
I'm just watching Living Daylights.
Oh, that's right. I watched that the other night.
Yeah,
it's on
Amazon and Hulu. Hulu.
Yeah,
Dalton got a raw deal. I really enjoyed those films. I really did.
Yeah, I did too.
I love Dalton's my bond.
Dalton's my bond too. Yeah, I was all about Dalton.
We're from a specific age where Dalton came out right when, I love Roger Moore.
I did too.
Dalton was like, he's so gritty and dark.
Like Living Daylights, I can watch that movie over and over again.
I love that movie.
So do I. We're completely off topic.
Well, we should. Well,
No, it's an MXM podcast. Chris is a point. Living Daylights. He's doing the same mission that Tom Cruise is doing in our first
exactly.
act. You're gaslighting this woman to then get to her boyfriend. Like you are
exactly. It's the same. I was gonna say I just watched it the other night. I'm like, this is Mission Impossible 2. You know, he's
even at an opera.
Yeah,
like later on when they're in and they're for Rogue Nation for yeah. us. Yeah, for Rogue Nation.
I guess we have notes about the actual intro. Now the music, you're right, is just a Limp Bizkit. It's just blown out
Limp
guitar.
It's just Biscuit wails. It's Hans Zimmer redoing and Limp Bizkit together. It's just like, whoa.
Oh, so
honestly, what pisses me off is that the intro is where you should. I don't know. Maybe if only the first movie. We only had the first movie to reference. But like, I feel like the sequels did a great job of what you have those like little snippets of what's to come in the film, and all you see is like a Greek guy and a criminal, and you're kind of more confused. You're not like, oh, what's this about? You're like, what is this about? Because I see a plane go down in the Colorado Rockies. I see Tom Cruise in the Arizona desert climbing. And this Russian guy has something in a virus in his body. Like, you know a little bit of that.
Yeah, we didn't earn Bellerophon because most people, when they saw this movie, didn't have a phone that could tell them what the hell Bellerophon.
I know the phrase Chimera. Like that like the monster has gotten a lot of play in like, you know, mythology Chimera. Movies, but I never heard of the hero of that story. So it's so funny that the movie starts off with talking about a hero and a villain. You go, oh, the hero's a character? I never heard of that name. Like, I
we talked about this the first week. We were like, they're making this like, every story needs Yuri. Every story needs, or is his name Yuri? What's his name?
Dmitri.
Every story needs a hero, and that's the villain, and that villain needs a hero. And you're like, what? What? No, yeah, I don't know. You're saying it like it's some old adage that we all say.
I don't want to step on other people's minutes, but yeah, there's a lot of questions about that, and I'll let you cover with them. Like, outside of like, yeah, one's a good thing and one's a bad thing, that's it. Like, you could have chosen a billion other hero with a thousand faces type of stories.
It's Robert Towns.
I looked this one up. It's Bellerophon. That's fun.
I also feel like having the pen and ink drawings in the background gives me a very Marvel vibe.
It does. It looks like the Marvel scroll from Marvel Studios now.
Yeah.
And it does. And it also, it's funny because all the other movies from now on, from first one and every other one, is like the TV show, and it shows parts of the movie. Mm-hmm. Well, the Brad Bird one shows the fuse.
The fuse flowing, yeah.
Going. But it's like, oh, what is this?
But also, they do show clips from the film, so yeah.
It's like 35 seconds. This is 35 seconds of whack, 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 whack.
I honestly
whack.
Feel like the studio that made this intro was not near the – wasn't even in the building where the footage of the film was. They were just like, we don't have any footage. We got nothing to do. Oh, God, what do we know so far? And like they know, like, and the one guy has like the one-page synopsis. The virus Chimera and the antidote Bellerophon. They go in Carta and they're going on Carta and they look it up and they get that image and they go, well, just that, and we'll just do a 3D graphic that just digitalizes, explodes. That's what we got. And we'll show the letters in such a zoom that you don't even know what letter it is at one point.
You know, Mission Impossible movies have become very, very succinct in the way that they do their openings since the first, I mean, with the first one and moving forward after this one, that this one really stands out as like, doesn't fit in with the rest of the film openings. And I mean, it's almost as unique now as the James Bond ones in their own way, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. And let's look at this. Look at this transition at 39 seconds. Something happens that never happens in any other Mission Impossible movies. The name Mission Impossible explodes. And then those explosive bits become stars. And then we get a Star Wars pan down.
Yep.
And then we get a flamenco dancer flyby wipe.
But before we get to Star Wars, the graphic design on the word impossible and the numeral twos.
The tuberal.
That's real bad.
It is pretty bad.
That looks like Photoshop I would have done in 1999.
That is, it is Photoshop 1999.
I mean,
it's After Effects.
I was in ninth grade, and that was the Photoshop I would have done.
It's the motion.
It's bad.
Yeah.
To Liz, this is the Dougray Scott of title sequences. Yes. It's just mishmash of stuff you can't even understand. You're like, what is that?
I love the flamenco dancer wipe. I'm into that.
That's what I'm saying. Because there's another one later.
Star Wars.
Yeah. And the thing is that they use them so well, and it's a great visual effect that if you're not thinking about it, it doesn't come off as a visual effect, but it really is as a wipe thing, you know?
Because they quickly get us, show us Seville, Spain, and now we're in Seville.
Yeah.
So that's, and that.
I just thought this is like just one big long advertisement for Australia. And I'm
remember also in a little bit, there's going to be like a fire festival. It's weird.
Yeah. And it's all shot in Australia. So it's not like it is, you know, Seville really.
I mean,
this house is like at the foot of the bridge by the opera house.
Seville's Australia.
Yeah. The house is called Boomerang Billiard Avenue.
Oh,
are you kidding
me? That's awesome.
It's on the waterfront at Elizabeth Bay. It was up for sale.
100 Wallaby Way, Sydney, Australia.
Exactly. 42 Wallaby Way.
42 Wallaby Way.
Yes.
Is there any CGI in the shot of the house? Like, did they make it to look more Spain? Like,
oh, you know it is.
Like that church cathedral. Is that real, or is that like they took that from a image of Spain?
I think the whole house shot from the outside is literally probably an effect shot, but the inside's real.
Be, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, that church is the mother of the venomous mammal. I don't know what's Australian. Everything in Australia will kill you, so I don't know what it would be. Well, think of a good Australian name.
Well, I mean, because you can have an individual house built in the like Spanish mission style, but the whole neighborhood's not built that way. So they like the exterior shots.
Yeah, I think they just did. It's just a mat of the house.
Yeah, I think it's just a mat or a CG mat.
So
CG painting,
like a Moulin Rouge style. It's like if you look real closely, you can see the Eiffel Tower in the background.
and inside the house, it looks like the set of like Jesus.
We're
Christ
not
Superstar.
Inside yet.
All right.
Let's go inside real quick. Dave, I think you had some notes on that, right?
I just wanted to say the inside looks so much like a fake set of, like, Jesus Christ Superstar or, like, the inside of a Chi-Chi's. Like this weird courtyard rooftop arch thing looks so fake. I'm like, wait, are inside the house they have an exterior patio? Is this, like, a Roxbury thing?
No, that's what Spanish mission style is. Yeah, they have interior. It's a private residence, but it's based on the Spanish missions that they built in California. And Spanish architecture typically has an interior courtyard with four walls around it. So, yeah, that's like legit.
Maybe that's what they meant by mission for Mission Impossible. This is the Mission Impossible.
That is probably what they meant, yes. Mm-hmm, I think you're right.
It all tracks. And we have some flamenco dancers that are all dancing kind of in a... Do we know what this dance is? Do any of us know?
It's a flamenco. I don't know specifically which one, but I have things to say about flamenco in the next minute.
Let's go to the tech of the app.
Oh, Chris has now decided he's going to be the one doing the tech of the app.
Yeah, we're going to tech of the app.
He has summoned it. We're going. All right. We are in the courtyard of the tech of the app. Liz, as our newest guest, why don't you go first and tell us what tech in this episode you think we should talk about?
Well, there's not a lot to choose from, so I'm going to go real basic here with footwear technology. Very, very old school. I'm gonna go with the flamenco dancer's shoes.
Okay.
It takes a lot of skill to build a shoe that is comfortable and stable to dance in.
See, this is why we needed a woman's eye.
Yes.
You have to have a woman on to just make something up out of thin air when there's no actual, like...
No. We've had men. We've had 110 episodes with almost, not mostly men, but 75% men making stuff up. So, no, I mean,
fresh perspective on made up things.
Men can make up
there
stuff.
There were just so you know, from a man's perspective, there were exploding Oakley sunglasses not 43 seconds ago.
There's three of saying. You to have to all talk about tech. So, I just thought I wanted to be different.
No, it's perfect. It's perfect. Yes, it's exactly what we needed. What about you, Dave?
The zoom on this lens during the intro where I can't make a goddamn thing out. Like, it's just, it's a letter, but it's too zoomed in. I can't see. It's a horse's head. I can't see. It's too zoomed in. And a lot of flashes of light. Like, there's at least, like, 8 flashes of the fuse, like, in my face. That's a lot of technology thrown at me.
All right. So the... and seizure-inducing intro is yours.
Technology! It's too much!
Dave broke the fourth wall on his tech of the app.
How about you, Chris?
I'm going to go with the flamenco dancer wipe. That's my
second
idea.
What's happening?
Because that's the coolest thing. That wipe is awesome.
Wait, all right. It doesn't have to be in-universe tech?
Well, it is in-universe. Oh, you mean like shoes that the actor's wearing? I mean, no, it can be a tech. It can be a technical shot. It could be a Zoom, a dolly.
Yeah, last season we said that Frank Oz was puppeting Claire, so you know.
Yeah, that was what tech of the app it
was. But Claire was in the scene. She was the puppet.
Well, the flamenco dancer's in the scene. All right. She is the scene.
Okay. Now I know going forward.
It doesn't have to be diegetic. No. Okay, it doesn't have to be something that is in the movie.
All right.
Long as that's clear, I'm going with the freaking glasses because no one said them. Exploding sunglasses.
That's fine.
Hello. God.
That's fine. They're so played out. Come on, Jonathan.
Oh, it's so last week.
Yeah. So last week.
It's so beginning of the day. We've moved on. We're in Seville now.
Quit trying to make the glasses happen, Jonathan. It's not going to.
I like that. Good tie-in. Synergy.
I'm all about the synergy.
On Wednesdays, we flamenco. We'll come back tomorrow for minute 12. Mondays, we do plugs. So let's start again. Where Liz, why don't you down a little bit of that beer and tell us some of your plugs of what you're working on right now.
If you haven't heard enough of me so far, you can type Mean Girls Minute into your internet device of choice and listen to me ramble about random things and sometimes the movie Mean Girls 1 minute at a time.
It's a good podcast. Everyone should listen to it.
It's all right.
Okay. All right. Dave, what about you? Yeah. Thinking of podcasts that are all right. Dave.
You can find me over at 5 Minutes of Mystery, where I cover the 1999 Ben Stiller comedy Mystery Men. If you're more of the holiday type, Sean and I did Groundhog Day and Groundhog Minute. We covered the movie Groundhog Day with Bill Murray 1 minute at a time, and it's wrapped up. But a lot of minutes there to cover.
Yeah, we're on there somewhere.
Yeah, go listen if you haven't listened to Groundhog Minute. It's good.
It is good.
More than once. It's different every time.
I make a surprise guest appearance on the very last episode.
Sweet.
Awesome.
Oh, you're like their Crystal Beth.
I mean, it was, I think you're on it too, Jonathan, because it was at the train station in Denver.
Oh, yeah. I guess I am. I'm literally screaming. If you want to hear me screaming in the background, not knowing I was being taped, that's basically, I'm having been overserved.
I'm just sitting there in the trading Pokemon with George on his I have both of our phones the whole time they're recording, and I'm just trading Pokemon.
And you can catch more of that conversation on a Discussions with Dave episode where I just record the entire thing raw.
Yeah, raw dog. Raw. Well, that's a great place to end, guys. You can find us anywhere on MinuteImpossible.com. We have merchandise, Patreon. Join our Patreon. Thank you so much to our patrons who help us fund our show and get some t-shirts from our merch store. I know Dave is an owner of one of our shirts, more than one.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, maybe two.
Maybe two.
He owns as many as me. So check those out. And until tomorrow, I've been Jonathan.
I've been Chris.
I've been Dave.
I'm always Liz.
This minute will self-destruct.
See you next time on the show. It's done. It was so fun. Thanks for listening to Minute Impossible.